welcome to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood, here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
So here we are on the record. My guest this week is Mark Kinsley, the new president of Englander Mattress and also one half of the famous and brilliant Dos Marcos podcasting team, the world's greatest mattress podcast. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. When you're talking about the brilliance, one specific Mark, or is it equally distributed between both marks?
Well, you know, I did see on Facebook there was this poll that you could vote for your favorite mark. So I did vote for Mark.
You know, and right now, as of last check, Mark is winning.
So for people who don't know, your only choice is to vote for Mark, no last names. So that is a great gimmick. And a great place.
Well, it was funny too because Mark Quinn, my co-host, we recorded some episodes of the podcast yesterday. And said my cousin called me and she said, "Hey, did you know that on your Facebook page, somebody's put up a poll that's asking people to vote for their favorite Mark on the Dos Marcos podcast?" And he's like, "Surely Kinsley wouldn't do that." And so then, she goes, "Oh, and by the way," his cousin said to him, she said, "I think you're winning." So then he pops over. He hadn't seen it. I posted it on the Facebook page. So he pops over there, and there are many, many comments, a lot of them really funny too. At one point, somebody said, "Hey, I'll take Bill, I'll take George, anybody but Mark." And so I responded, of course, with a picture of Bill Clinton standing next to George Bush. And I said, "That would be a really podcast.
I would pay money to listen to that podcast."
Yeah, so we obviously just have a lot of fun with it and try to talk all things mattress industry. But you're right, as of last check, it is known widely to be the one of the world's greatest mattress industry podcasts. Shocking as that may come.
You know, as a listener, I understand why. So, but you have a new role. Let's talk about that. As of April 1st, Kevin Tolman is retiring and you will be all alone at the head of Englander. What does that feel like?
Well, luckily, you know, I'll be able to pick up the phone and call Kevin if something comes up. He's been an incredible leader for this company for the past, you know, many, many years now. And he's laid a foundation for success. You know, Kevin he's been in the bedding business for about 50 years, and he's a legend. And so to be able to work under him, even for a short period of time, has been incredibly rewarding. And on top of that, Kevin's just a fantastic guy. He's funny. He's spirited. He knows so much about the industry. He has great history to pass along to me. And he's put the Englander organization on footing that can help me be successful beyond. And I really think that anything that we do is really kind of mapped back to everything that Kevin did. He has organized, you know, a licensing group, and licensing group built this mattress industry that we all enjoy today. And of course, things are evolving. But he's put this group in a position where distribution is strong. You know, a dozen factories across the U.S. We're in 28 countries. He opened up all that business over the years with international licensees. You know, Englander is the strongest latex brand in the Pacific Rim. In Korea, they have Englander storefronts opened up now. In the U.S., you know, we're known for making real solid, you know, high quality product that people aren't going to get phone calls about. So I come into this thing and I look at it and I have my skill sets that are, you know, traditionally have been more on the marketing side of things and brand building. And I look at things operationally and functionally, and I'm like, I have everything to work with here. So I'm incredibly excited to be able to take the Englander brand to the next level and really help define who we're going to be in the future, because it is a changing industry and we are going to change with it.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because you have a unique path that you followed. Typically, the president of a company comes from usually the sales side, most often, sometimes from the operation or engineering side. But you came up the marketing path. And I'm wondering if there's some significance to that, not just for yourself personally, but in terms of where the industry is at and what the needs of the industry are today. Because it seems like there's, you know, you talk about how the industry is changing. Do you think that skill set, I mean, are you paving a path? Do you see this as the next path that people might need to pursue to be successful in the mattress industry in the next era?
I think every organization is different, and Englander just happened to be in a spot where they needed somebody with the skill sets that I bring to the table. And, you know, I have a business background as well, but that's never been in leading an organization that's large, because I was at Leggett & Platt. You know, I was a part of, you know, key leadership teams and things like that. And of course I've had, you know, my own business for about 5 years. But it really is a unique thing for, you know, marketing person, or that's been their background, to be able to step in and take the reins of the organization, because you're right. People have come up through the sales side or their operations side. And it really just depends on what that group needs at that time. And rarely has it been somebody with deep marketing experience, at least from what I've seen. Usually it is somebody who knows a little bit about everything, that has, you know, strong relationships and ties with retailers, or maybe a strong operational or finance background, because it just depends on where, you know, things are in that business at that moment. I don't know if I would, you know, pop open the crystal ball and, you know, start putting my hands over it and the electrodes come out and look at it and say, hey, this is what's going to happen in the future. Many more marketing people are going to take leadership positions at the highest level. But I think it's possible. I think it's possible because we live in an attention economy, and being able to grab attention, hold attention, guide people towards solutions that make sense for them and that obviously map back to the products you make. I think that's a needed skill set that people are realizing they can't ignore. And so whenever you think about the conditions of the marketplace and an over-communicated world, we know that being able to communicate clearly and have the brand that you're going to stand for, who you're going to be, inform the products that you create, and creating that whole ecosystem of assets that help people sell your products at retail or you sell your products online, it's going to be a core skill set. I truly do believe that.
Do you think that that's a function of the way the industry has changed in the last couple of years? I mean, if you think of the traditional path to purchase for a consumer, it typically was involved a store and the ability to train RSAs and the ability to spiff those RSAs. It was a very sales-driven business. And now when you look at the path that boxed beds and all these direct-to-consumer brands are taking, it's really much more about the message, right? I mean, a lot of them out of the gate seem to have attacked what they perceived as the traditional weaknesses of the bedding shopping process, right? Consumer pain points in that process. Are we seeing more of a marketing battle emerge as the industry evolves?
We are, and I think you nailed it there. We're really in a battle of messaging cascading down to the consumer and it being meaningful. And what I mean by that is, if you think about, just take the online environment in its purest form. You have a consumer going online, shopping for something. They find a few brands, they whittle it down. And once they end up on that person's website, you know, whether it's Tuft & Needle or Casper or Lisa or whoever it might be, or Purple or Nectar, once they get them on their website, they are owning that consumer's experience. They're able to, you know, funnel them down from high level messaging to key points to whatever else it is that particular buyer needs to feel comfortable with making that purchase. Now, conversely, if you put somebody into a retail store, what happens? They see many different white rectangles, you know, merchandised in, you know, sometimes a confusing way, sometimes a logical way. But either way, it's not an owned brand experience. And meanwhile, we look at all these emerging brands, these digital natives, and they're looking for growth. And where are they looking for growth? They're trying to find growth at retail, because there seems to be, you know, a bit of a stall on, you know, just this absolute meteoric growth that's happened online. And so they're trying to find growth for their companies, and they're looking for it in brick and mortar. And a lot of them are trying to create brick and mortar experiences that are very similar to what they've done online, which is an owned experience. You know, Casper, they're not trying to put their stuff into a ton of retailers. They're trying to open up their own brick and mortar stores. So like a website, they can control that experience. So, if you do go the route of trying to put your stuff in traditional brick and mortar retail where you're competing with other products, number one, the feel is a deal. You've got to be able to have a product that works for people. But number two, you're investing in a new skill set for these digital natives, and that is training. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Bill. Whenever you think about the organization that you need to create, you need to create a robust training program so that that messaging you're so passionate about on your website gets to the RSA and then gets to the consumer so that they're making a purchase that, you know, benefits your company. And I tell people this all the time. I said, look, if somebody else comes in and tries to play your game, you should be better at it than them. So whenever you think about e-commerce as a business model versus your wholesale model, you know, the wholesale business is, you know, POP and marketing assets and training and consistency and messaging, you know, and good products that compete with who you know is on your floor at the price bands where you tend to play. That's different. That's a different development process. And to resource that properly, you got to be there. You got to invest in it. So the conditions of the marketplace and the value of messaging and making that get its way down to the consumer, it's going to be a tough battle. And it should be fun, though, because I think the competition is only going to elevate the importance of the products that we sell, and is going to make consumers more interested in sleep.
You know what is, I find interesting, if you look at the last year or two of the industry, it seems like the specialty bedding retailer is the most susceptible or has taken the most pain as a result of these direct to consumer players. And then you talk about guys coming up and owning their own stores. I wonder if that's the point where the balance of power back, because in a digital environment, I can very efficiently sit at my kitchen table or on my sofa and shop all of these different brands. But if you're going to ask me to go into a store or a Tuft & Needle store or a Nectar store, now I am only getting that one brand. And if I want selection, I have to now go back and start hustling and going to all of these different stores. And I wonder if that's the point at which you, I don't know, it just seems to me that at that point, the model breaks down. And I'm kind of curious how that evolves.
Aren't we all? it's a guess. I think at this point, it's a swag. But I do pay attention a lot to path to purchase. And it's messy. Somebody might start with a TV commercial, and that reminds them that their back has been hurting for a while. Somebody else might be very intentional about it and wake up one morning and say, I've had enough. I'm going to go online and search for what's the best mattress. So where people start in that journey and how it ultimately leads to the final purchase, I think it's only going to wind in and out of online and brick and mortar even more. And in between all that, you have reviews and you have word of mouth. You know, I talk to people a lot about this idea of getting your message right, because when you get your message right, somebody's going to hear it in the peripheral or in that sphere of influence of the person who's the actual buyer. Because whenever I need a new product, like a washer and dryer, I'm talking to my dad, talking to my mom, talking, you know, aunts and uncles and friends and saying, hey, what do you guys have? So you have that piece of the puzzle. And that's where reviews and goodwill from your community of buyers comes into play, because that has a long-term impact. So it's only going to get more messy, I think. But there are some key kind of guideposts that are out there that I think brands and retailers can pay attention to and say, okay, if I have limited resources, but I know people are going to shop online, they're going to come to a store and they're probably going to talk to folks, I know some key areas where I can make an investment so that I am, you know, setting myself up for some success whenever people do start that messy, wandering journey toward better sleep.
That's the other piece of it. So far, if you look at the box bed message, it doesn't seem to be as much about better sleep as it is about the shopping process and trying to remove, right? I mean, it's that, you know, mattress stores are greedy. It's that you only, you know, confusion. It's the RSA attack as you come in the door. It's all of those. It's all about process, and it's not about the consumer benefit. And it just seems to me that the more traditional mattress players who play in that better sleep area, the more the game shifts to their turf, it seems to me that the better equipped they are to fight that battle, right? I mean, it's shifting the battle, making them fight on your ground rather than the reverse.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's like I talked about with, you know, if somebody starts to play your game, you should be better at it than them. I think ultimately, you know, where you started with that was many of the online brands were trying to make it about the experience. And that's what the industry missed early on. We were talking about how the product was nothing innovative or, you know, groundbreaking. And many people, you kind of from the traditional side of things, didn't understand that people saw it as a hassle. You know, people wanted to not go out and shop on the weekends because it's the way that we as humans, we as a society are evolving. You know, things that are trending up are travel and dining out, right? Those are experiential. We want to go out and have experiences that are fun and positive with our free time. We don't want to spend it investing in a durable good that the industry has commoditized over the years. So, you know, we've really done ourselves a disservice for a long time by not talking about better sleep and making a firm connection back to the mattress. So, the messaging, you know, around better sleep and around convenience, they're just starting to bubble up, and the convenience message was winning online. And I think that, you know, the compressed space, the compressed roll pack space is only going to grow. But I think we as an industry have to stay focused on that core emotional piece of the puzzle, which is better sleep can change your life. And I can't tell you how many times I'll go out and people say, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm in the mattress industry. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I'll quickly get away from this idea of, you know, selling mattresses. And I say, you know, my mission is to help people get a better night's sleep, because sleep impacts every moment of your day and your night. So therefore it impacts every moment of your life. So you should give yourself the best possible chance to get the best sleep, because that's how you go out and change the world. And whenever I give people that 10-cent version of the purpose behind what we do, eyes light up and people stop and they're like, I never thought about it like that. And, you know, this is something that, you know, we've been talking about for so long. Many of the people in the industry that share that passion for helping people get better sleep, we've been talking about this for so long. It seems obvious, but whenever you don't pay attention to it, it's an infrequent purchase. And maybe you just think that suffering through bad sleep is the order of the day. It gets lost. So I think we need to, there's some of those key messages around, we talked about warranties over the year. We've talked about selling on warranty as a weak position. Convenience bubbled up online. I think we need to stay focused on helping people understand that better sleep is life-changing, and this is the product to do it. You know, not a pill, not some bottled up juice that you're going to down before bedtime.
How does that, I'm curious how that translates into a different retail experience, because you talked about it, right? People want to dine out, they want experiences. When I look at manufacturer marketing messages, so many folks talk about that better sleep experience. And then I go into a store, and whether it's a furniture store or a mattress specialty store, typically it's almost all glass, the daylight streaming through the windows. I'm looking at a floor of square or rectangular white boxes. And the only way I get any kind of a better sleep message in that environment is if the RSA comes over and starts asking me questions about how I sleep and what's my comfort level and do I turn over a lot. But the store itself, and maybe I haven't seen enough stores. Are you aware? I mean, are there some retailers that you've seen who create that kind of environment that supports that message really effectively? Or do you think that that's a disconnect at point of sale?
I think for the most part, thematically, it's a disconnect at the point of sale. I think that you have some organizations out there that are consistently investing in training. And when they do that, they're going to have a staff that, you know, is filled with rock stars. And those rock stars are going to go out and they genuinely help, you know how to help people understand better sleep, some of the environmental, you know, factors that could be impacting their sleep. They want to help people. But that's probably not the majority. So part of it is culture, and I not just culture of an organization, but culture of a place. So if you're surrounded by a bunch of people that are very pragmatic and they don't want to mess with it, and you know that, I mean, obviously you're going to merchandise and you're going to create a store experience that, you know, is more pragmatic for the audience that you're serving. But I think people are interested, overwhelmingly, many people are interested in nutrition and fitness. And the third leg of that health stool is sleep. But we have to tell them about sleep and the advancements and the research and the findings. We have to help them understand all the sensory cues that you can create for better sleep. And it's such an opportunity to do that because, you know, traffic is lower than it used to be. I hear that from about every single retailer I talk to. So if traffic is lower than it used to be and you get a door swing, you have to maximize that opportunity. And to do that, I think you need to create an emotional, true connection with somebody through a topic that's meaningful to them. And that is their sleep. And if you sell them a mattress and all of a sudden, you know, 3 months down the road, you know, somehow you hear that that mattress is, or they're not sleeping well, and you fail to ask questions that revealed, hey, they live by train tracks and they have a bunch of light shining into their bedrooms because they don't have blinds. You could have found that out on the front end and connected them to solutions with sound conditioning machines or blackout drapes or eye masks, or even, you know, helping them understand how to use earplugs so that they actually got good sleep on the product you sold and they're not blaming the mattress that they purchased from your store. So I just think that the meta skill that we're going to have to develop, and I know this is tough because I know there's a high churn rate whenever it comes to RSAs, but the meta skill we're going to have to develop is asking open-ended, revealing questions. It's what you do, Bill. It's what your team does in journalism. That's like a new requirement, I think.
Well, I guess if the journalism thing doesn't work out, maybe I can go sell mattresses. Ask open-ended questions to consumers.
We should experiment with that. We should have Bill goes out and sells mattresses for a day using his journalism skills, put up some, you know, behind-the-scenes cameras, wire you up with a mic. I think it's a great idea.
You know, I'll try it, but oh my goodness, the potential for disaster there. I mean, if I flame out on the selling floor, how embarrassing would that be? Of course, on the other hand, if I succeed, that would be wonderful too, right?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? And the thing is, you get to write the story at the end of this, so you can just kind of pluck out those moments of heroics.
You raised an interesting point. You talked about the stool, right? The three legs of the stool. But the two of the legs always seem to be missing in a retail environment. And I wonder if there's an opportunity. You talk about disruption, right? And disruptive environments. I always have my eye out for what the new retail format is, what the new way of doing business is. And I'm wondering if there is a connection between fitness, nutrition, and bedding and mattresses that could create a retail format around that. I mean, you talk about performance bedding. I think somebody who's done that kind of and told that story is Bedgear. That connection, that performance connection, that there is some element. And I wonder if there's not a bigger opportunity for some retailers to look at those other legs of the stool to create a more experiential retail environment.
Hey, I'm Trisha Yearwood here in Hollywood at the legendary Capitol Studios. If you're in High Point for the furniture market, be sure to stop by Klausner Home Furnishings, your one-stop shopping destination for everything furniture, including Nashville, the latest addition to my Trisha Yearwood home collection. You'll find something for every room, all of it inspired by my love of home, family, and friends, and what I call a recipe for comfortable living.
Come see the entire collection at Klausner, 101 North Hamilton.
I think there is an opportunity, and it's going to take guts, and it's going to take mapping out a plan and an experience that you want people to have whenever they come into that environment. And that's thinking through the before, the during, and the after. So let's just take the middle of that. What would happen if somebody came into, you know, whatever you call this space, but it has, you know, maybe it has a gym in there, and maybe it has, you know, a smoothie bar, and maybe it has a sleep experience room, and but it's branded not just as a sleep shop, but as some sort of, you know, health and wellness shop that helps you understand these different things. There's a huge opportunity for that, because you've seen it unfold, like in the CrossFit community. People are paying, you know, much higher memberships each month to go in and have somebody tell them what to do and to have a sense of community around that. You know, people, you know, signing up for all kinds of apps and programs where they, you know, have to end up getting penalized or paying money into a pot if they screw up on their diet. Not to mention years and years of Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers and all the other programs that are out there. So I believe that we've had the decade of nutrition, and it's firmly taken hold. Like, people have a basic vocabulary around that topic, and they can have an intelligent conversation. Same thing for fitness. Like, I think these things have their tentacles in broader society that are deep enough that it's not going to go anywhere. Like, the tide has genuinely changed there. But the next piece of that puzzle is sleep. But I think, you know, what you're talking about, connecting it to those two topics that people now understand, I think is a huge opportunity. And everyone knows, whenever you talk to them about, hey, what happens when you get a bad night's sleep? Oh, I just feel terrible. Well, what do you do about that? I don't know. But every single person knows. I literally have never talked to a single person that's like, no, when I don't sleep, I'm totally fine. People say things like, I can power through, I can get by, mm-hmm. You know, but that's not living life to its fullest. And we know that, like, intuitively human beings know that. So I think that ecosystem is ripe for somebody to do something creative and innovative in. And that's the key here. We need to start looking outside of our industry for examples that we can use to create that experiential retail. And I think that, you know, we talk about this a lot. We've mentioned it at the betting conference, at the leadership conference. You guys write about it in your publication. You talk about it. But you got to go out, get outside of your environment. I did this one day in New York City. Like, I was there with some of my colleagues, and they didn't know what I was doing. I walked 11 miles in one day.
Wow.
Because you're in New York City, that's where the biggest and the best retail environments are in the world. And I thought, I'm going to go out and figure out, what does the new retail look like? And invariably, it was experiential. You go to the Nike store, and they had these shoes that this guy was taping off, and there's DJ playing music, and he's dipping them in these, it looked like a tie-dye metallic finish, and he like these little chemical baths, and you'd pull them out, and they're dripping. And these custom Nikes would come out. You go to the Converse store, the same thing. They had a workshop where you could create your own. You could design your own. I mean, we could have had Dos Marcos Converse shoes, you know, cartoon faces printed on the side. Everywhere I went, they were trying to create an interactive experience that was fun and memorable, because they know you can sit at home in your underwear, click a few buttons, and stuff's going to show up at your house. So you got to give people a reason to come in.
It's, you know, it's so hard, I think, for retailers to envision that. And then that transition, right? It's one thing to start something like that from scratch, which is, I think, so many times why disruptors get the upper hand, because they have no legacy business to protect. They have no legacy systems. And it's, how do you reach for that shiny piece of fruit without letting go of the one that you already have? And that's I think what stops so many companies, not just in bedding, but in furniture, from making that big transition, because that's a big risk.
It is. I mean, it's a risk every time you bring a new product on your floor, because you have the capital investment of inventory and floor samples and everything that goes around that POP. You have an investment of time and resources into training, ongoing training. You don't know if it's going to work. So there are risks with every piece of your business that you change. And this is certainly a bigger one. I would say you have to experiment with something and trust your gut. Go out, do your homework, learn about, you know, what's worked in some other environments, learn about what might be working for other retailers, and, you know, emulate that to the best of your ability and put your own derivative twist on it to make it something that fits in your environment. But maybe it is starting small with an experiment and saying, hey, we're going to give this 6 months or a year. We're only going to change, you know, this one part of our business, get it right, test it out, and see if it works. I mean, I'm not saying throw out the baby with the bathwater and completely reinvent yourself. But to think that price an item and TV advertising and print ads only is going to continue to work into the future, I think is pretty short-sighted.
So let's take that and apply it to your new role at Englander. What's the piece that you envision experimenting with or trying with? Where's the risk going to come in what you're looking at going forward?
No. Whenever I stepped in to Englander, I had my first priority was to go out and learn about the history of the brand, talk to retailers, talk to our sales reps, spend time in the field and figure out what does the brand stand for in people's minds, consumers, retailers, RSAs, and our own team. And it was very apparent quickly, but I had to validate it over time. So I spent about a month and a half talking to people, time on the road, going into stores, factories, on and on it went. And I realized from the outset that people think about Englander as a brand of mattress that's good and they don't get calls about. And so when I see that, I say, great, that's a fantastic foundation to start from. People trust our products. I was looking at goodbed.com and we have like the highest unaided review of any brand on there. So people are taking their time. We have not invested in this because it would be something that I would pay attention to in the future, but people would go on goodbed.com and they would rate Englander mattresses and they would rate them really well, but we had not invested in generating any of those reviews at all. So when you look at that, you're thinking this is a great place to start from, but Englander as a brand doesn't really stand for anything in people's minds. When I look at product positioning and how to create a robust brand that's meaningful and cuts through the clutter, I'm thinking, what's that one slice of real estate that we can own in people's minds? How can we make that messaging cut through the clutter and cascade down to retail? And it's easy to repeat and it's easy for consumers to understand and our products pay it off. And so, like I said, my first priority was define reality and figure out what was going on in the marketplace now, what we meant to people. And the truth is, it's not a whole lot. We don't mean a whole lot other than good quality products. So I look at that and I think, to your question about risk, it's going to be a risk to be specific about who we are, but we are going to define our brand in a meaningful way. That is going to inform the products we create, the programs that we put together with marketing assets and collateral and digital programs top to bottom that help support this at retail. And when people go online, I want them to see on their phone or on their computer what they're going to see in the store. And it sounds like a simple thing, but in a licensing organization, you have to bring all these things together and you have to have vision from the people that are running your factories and selling your products. Everybody has to be singing from the same hymnal, and we are. And so what I've done is pump the brakes, learn. We're going to put these plans and programs in place so this brand stands out in the marketplace, and we're going to be aggressive. We're going to go after market share.
You do not yet, I'm guessing, have that identity in your firmly in your mind to the point that you want to talk about that publicly. Am I correct? We're not there yet.
We have some ideas floating around, but nothing with enough definition that I would want to roll it out. But I will say that, you know, some of the key points I touched on are the things that matter. And I tell you what, whenever you try to simplify a message, it isn't easy. So it's a funny thing to think simple isn't easy. So there's work to do to get that at a place where I felt comfortable sharing it. But I will say this, our brand is going to be, you know, something that is fun to experience, is, you know, easy to navigate, and is different than what's out there. And not different for the sake of being different, different for the sake of answering the requests of what people have been throwing at me.
Interesting. So we'll have to have Mr. Perry follow up with you at a later date to circle back and get the big launch details when this is all ready.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the next few months, like I said, we're going to invest in brand. We're going to invest in developing our national line. And it's funny, the licensing organizations out there, I think people have been frustrated with them over the years because there's no consistency of product. And that's one of our major focuses and priorities. You know, we want people to be able to buy the same product across the country. We have a national and international footprint. Our international licensees love what we do here in the U.S., you know, as a top 10 brand, and they want more of it, and they want that consistency and that messaging as well. So we're excited. I mean, you know, the logical launch date is going to be January 2020. Las Vegas market. So there's plenty of work. I mean, anybody that's been in this business and has truly been through a reset understands what goes into it. And we want to do it right. And I know people are excited for the Englander brand. And I'm not just saying that like being a sales guy. I'm saying that because people will come up to me and they say, hey, when you're ready, I want to see it first. We want something different and memorable. And, you know, I've had people come up to me at Las Vegas market whenever that was my first day on the job. A retailer from Northern California say, hey, we would love to have Englander back on our floor. We do not sell it, but people come in asking for it to this day. And so this is all news to me too. And I'm going, this is great. We're in such a dynamic market that people see the energy around an idea and they want to be a part of it. And I'm already seeing that. And that's really encouraging.
All right. And can I presume that there will not be any $6.99 queens with lifetime warranties?
That'd probably be a pretty safe assumption. We talked about that on the Dos Marcos podcast. I mean, you know, some of the online brands that are moving into retail could be in a real predicament, because if you have a $6.99 queen forever warranty and a $3,500 queen with a 10-year, which we've worked really hard as an industry to get to, there's a disconnect and there is a tough selling position potentially for an RSA. I think a skilled RSA can help people understand that. But man, not the strongest position whenever you think about the correction that we've undergone as an industry, trying to make those warranties not a weak selling tool, but instead something that just gives, you know, that dash of confidence a consumer needs to pull the trigger.
I mean, it's a shortcut to segmentation if it's done properly. Done improperly, essentially it invalidates all of the warranties. They all become irrelevant because there's no connection between the warranty and reality, or the warranty and the features, benefits, and product quality. At least in the consumer's mind.
Well, people go out and you're right. They go out and they buy a dishwasher or an oven or a refrigerator or some other durable good, televisions. You know, they don't have 20-year warranties. You're talking 1, 3, and 5, and protection plans to go along with that. So I think people, just from a logical sniff test standpoint, don't appreciate it. I mean, truly, I mean, they're looking at it going, well, that just doesn't pass the sniff test. So we have to align those things. We have to be committed to whatever decisions we make. And ultimately, you know, when you look at some of the online brands, like I said earlier, they created this owned environment where consumers experienced their products and they weren't having to compete with anybody else. Well, now that messaging that starts online is going to bleed out into the retail space, and you have to figure out how that matches up with the people selling your products. And you know, I think retailers are going to have to start picking strong partners, stronger partners. I mean, the products that you put on your floor are one thing, but the, you know, the consultative business building help that somebody's going to bring to the table, I think is going to be very important, because it's an ever-changing economy. It's a very, you know, dynamic mattress business. And so once you bring somebody in, I hope people just really take time to vet those partners and say, hey, what is the value added beyond just the products that they're going to give me? You know, can I pick up the phone and get a hold of them? Can I get some advice from them? Are they building out programs that make sense, not only, you know, in a traditional way, but in the digital footprint that I'm trying to create? So I think there's a lot there, and I think we need to be intentional as an industry. And I don't think the answer is just saying, well, this looks like a brand that's kind of built itself up online, so maybe I should hop on board. I think there's a place for that. Don't get me wrong. I do think there's a place for that. But there's also a place for knowing that your partners aren't going anywhere.
Well, that's a good place to stop right there. Your partners aren't going anywhere. And
And before we stop, though, I want to say I'm really happy that you're doing this podcast. And I hope that other people hop into the podcasting arena as well, because it's a great way to share ideas, to highlight some of the good actors in our industry that are doing fun and creative things. And the more that we do that, the more that creating that retail experience that's going to be memorable and stand out is going to be easier, because you're going to have more ideas to draw from. You're going to have more people that have been on podcasts that you can pick up the phone and call to help you with your business. So you're doing it, we're doing it. I think that others should hop in and give it a swing. And I'm happy to help if somebody has any questions, but I love that you're doing it, Bill.
Well, thank you. I like the format because it allows you to dig a little deeper than, you know, a soundbite in a story or a 2-minute video. Interesting ideas, complex ideas, very difficult to explore in other formats. And that's the thing I like about the podcast, is it gives you a chance to dig a little deeper, to get into a debate, to have a little discussion, to explore some more complex concepts. So I look forward to that.
Well, keep up the good work. I've enjoyed today. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, they can drop me a note, mark@englander.com. And you can find me on Twitter @MarkKinsley. You can go to DosMarcosPodcast.com and find all our episodes there, or I'm sure that I'm on LinkedIn, and on it goes. Or you can just drop Bill a note, and
I'll be happy to connect you.
Thank you. I appreciate
Well, I'm
that.
A fan. So, you know, you and I have been talking about podcasting for the last year or so. And so we are finally off the diving board and into the water. So we'll have some fun together.